Tonight I want to talk about a big factor in our lives and just ask, what is this? What's wanting in our lives? We spend a tremendous amount of time in the mind state of desire or wanting. And I'll just pose this question to you. What is the one factor about the things we want that's always true? I mean, is it always true that when we get whatever we want, we'll be satisfied with it? Or completely satisfied? There isn't some little thing that's not quite right. Is it always true, even if we are completely satisfied, that we'll continue to be pleased by it? That it will remain as good as new? Or that it will last as long as we want it to? Maybe it'll get lost. Is it true that our lives will continue to hold a place for it? I mean, how many electronic gadgets have you had to make an effort to get rid of? Oh, they still work. But technology is just, and your life has just passed them by. They're in the way now. And even before we get what we are wanting, is it always true that it feels good to want it? I mean, we think that it's good, but it's this sort of sugar-coated yuck, really, when you examine it. So, what is the one thing that's always true about the things that we want? We don't have them. That's it. It's something that is lacking. It's wanting. Our lives are wanting because of this. And how does that make us feel about our lives? To have this thing missing. It's a state of mind in which your life and your idea of self don't quite measure up to what you imagine something could be. Now, you probably are familiar with the five hindrances, and you know that desire is the first one that people usually mention. These are the mind states that hold us back from being freed from suffering. As a matter of fact, these hindrances, and particularly desire, are in themselves forms of suffering. Now, there are two primary ways of working with the hindrances. We can either apply an antidote so that we can settle down to meditate. When I teach, intro to meditation, usually that's the approach I'm taking because people are feeling like, well, I just can't do this. I sit down and I've got grasshopper mind. I'm wanting this and hating that. And, my body's jumping around too, or I'm falling asleep, or I just don't really believe that this is what I should be doing right now. So there they are. Desire, aversion, restlessness, sloth or torpor, and doubt. But tonight, it's going to be about wanting. It's going to be about desire, mostly. So you can apply the antidote to any of the hindrances and settle things down, or you can use the hindrance itself as an object in a contemplative form of practice. I mean, not all meditation, not all practice is just watching the breath or just maintaining mindfulness of whatever arises. You can actually contemplate a particular object. Now, to kind of flesh out the position of this practice in the overall Buddhist path, there is the Satipatthana Sutta. Are y'all getting tired of hearing about that? You've all heard about it, right? Okay. So it is, according to the Buddha, or whoever wrote it, it's a fairly late sutta. It may have post-dated the historical Buddha. But it says, this is the only way, monks, for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation, for the destruction of suffering and grief, for the attainment of nibbana, namely, the four foundations of mindfulness. What are the four? They are mindfulness of the body, the feeling tone, or vedana, consciousness, and mental objects. And in this teaching, a monk or practitioner lives contemplating the body in the body for the first foundation. Ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful. Having overcome in this world covetousness and grief. That's a lot. So let me say it again and then kind of take it apart. Kind of a continuous living, contemplating the body in the body. And then it describes the attitude or the mental posture. Ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful. But a little more about the attitude, having overcome in this world covetousness and grief. So that's a form of desire and a form of aversion. In that practice, in that ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful attention, there is none of this clinging of desire or aversion. And always, the meditator establishes mindfulness first. And that's generally by observing the breath, although there are a lot of other techniques for establishing enough concentration for the mindfulness to be established. And then the practitioner will direct attention to aspects of each of the foundations. For example, the four postures of the body, or just the breathing, the breath entering and leaving the body. Now, with each of the four foundations, there are kind of thorough explanations and instructions of how to do this practice. And each of the foundation instructions ends with this refrain in what Bhikkhu Bodhi, the translator of the Majjhima Nikaya, calls the insight passage for each foundation. That's insight, a penetrating understanding. Quote, "And he abides independent, not clinging to anything in the world." So again, no clinging, no desire, no aversion. We cultivate that, and I give instructions, usually during meditation, to have an accepting awareness. This is an awareness that's not clinging. It's not reaching out to grab things, and it's not pushing them away. It's just abiding with some energy, some ardentness, comprehending clearly, and being mindful of whatever arises. Now, the Satipatthana Sutta, when it gets to the fourth foundation of states of mind, you start with the five hindrances. And with this mental posture, you can clearly see how desire, aversion, torpor, restlessness, and doubt each arises, is abandoned, and then eventually it just stops arising. It's extinguished. And that abandonment and extinction of the hindrances is accomplished by observing the hindrances in the way we're instructed to in the sutta. And that's this attitude. So if all we're doing is observing, it sounds pretty passive, right? We're just sitting there letting this stuff come up. And in fact, it's true. All we're doing is directing our attention. You may have heard me say in here before that in our lives, that's pretty much the extent of our power, is to direct our attention. To determine what we're going to focus on and how we're going to let it affect us. So in this practice, we direct it toward the chosen object, such as desire. And we notice if there is any in the mind. And usually it's what we're daydreaming about. We take our mind away from the daydream. We notice that there's desire, and we observe it, not in the form of this daydream, the story about how wonderful this thing is and how happy we'd be if we got it, but we observe it in its universal component. And that is the way the body experiences it. Desire is a feeling. And boy, you know it when what you desire is another human being. Cast your memory back however far that has to go, and it's definitely a physical feeling. Well, even, you know, wanting a new television set will affect the body. Just sitting here daydreaming about wanting to go on a vacation, it's going to resonate in the body. So how does it feel to want this thing? That's how we study desire in desire. Not by letting our mind run away with the thoughts about it, but by going into this universal component of the body's experience. This becomes a really dynamic and transformative process. What we're doing is we're studying suffering. And in order to do it, first of all, we have to establish the mindfulness. It's this alchemy of concentration plus this posture of the mind that's described in the Satipatthana Sutta. Ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful. Plus what I call the attitude, having overcome in this world covetousness and grief. So as we are studying it, we've accepted that it's there. And we're just studying it. Just getting to know it. Not for any purpose other than to know our experience as it is, to observe it in it. In other words, we intentionally put the mind into a condition where we're able to observe desire without getting attached to it, without getting sucked into it. Now, on my retreat this past week, I had the opportunity to have a whole day of classes with Andy Olensky, who's one of my scholar heroes. And he was talking about the process in which this transformative effect takes place. And he drew on the board a diagram of little minds, you know, from one moment to the next. And they had, it was like curly-haired heads. They had these mind states in different colors all around them. And the idea is that, you know, you start out mindful and the mind states are all positive. They're all wholesome. But then desire comes up, and for a moment, there will be this unwholesome state of mind, a hindrance, desire. And then in the next moment, by turning our attention to the body, it's like we drive the mind through the car wash, you know, and that unwholesome state of mind is abandoned. So that's this process of observing desire in desire without getting attached to the story. So what is that experience when we turn the attention to the body? I mean, I can remember being in love and thinking it was just a wonderful thing. You know, and then 6 months later or whatever, you know, not so wonderful anymore. And all of that motivation that came with that desire had led me down roads that I'd have been better off not having traveled. And you observe it in your meditation, you know, if you're having thoughts about, boy, would I love to have a cheeseburger or whatever, you know, whatever it is that you're jonesing for, you turn that attention to the body and you'll notice it feels kind of yucky. And the stronger the desire, the yuckier it feels. So there you have it. Desire is suffering. So there's that other way of dealing with the hindrances that I mentioned. Because the longer we stay in a mind state that's unwholesome, the more the mind gets conditioned to go into that mind state again. So if it's bothering us, if it's causing suffering, it's nice to apply an antidote. It's a wholesome thing to do. And the other day after I got back from my retreat, I was on my way to a meeting, and I was just feeling sort of generally out of place. You know, the traffic was thick. It was a corner with just a whole lot of impatient pedestrians. I needed to turn left through this crowd. You know, it looked like they were all about to bolt into the crosswalk from the sidewalk. And the light was against me, so I came to a stop. There was a fellow over here who was begging. And I knew that I had time to find my wallet and take out a dollar bill. So I called to the guy and I gave him the dollar. And he gave me this wonderful smile. He was so happy to get that dollar. And he thanked me, and we had this moment of connection where I could feel his gratitude. And also, I could feel my own. Because in that moment of generosity, I mean, I knew that being generous was an antidote to desire. And I was grateful that, first of all, that I had enough abundance in my life to be able to share this dollar, to give it away, to let go of it, and let someone else have it. And also, I was very grateful for that connection. And I was really grateful for the fact that I was no longer out of sorts, that I had settled back in to my life in which nothing was wanting. You know, that question, what's wanting in our lives? We are so fortunate in those moments when the answer is nothing. And that was the state that this antidote of generosity and gratitude put me into. So I was able to go from an unwholesome mind state to a wholesome mind state that had tranquility and joy in it. So you might ask, which is the better way to work with wanting? Should you bring an antidote in, or should you study it? Well, when you're turning left at an intersection, clogged with pedestrians, don't close your eyes and contemplate the feeling of desire in your body. It's not the right time. Use the antidote. But when you are meditating and desire pays you a visit, you know, this state of mindfulness, this open acceptance of whatever arises, it's like hanging out at the waterhole. And boy, desire is a frequent visitor. It almost always shows up. So use that opportunity to really deepen your practice and follow what the Buddha said was the only way for the destruction of suffering and grief. Thank you.